And I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Mona Malik and Charles Thomas. Charles Thomas is the athletic director of the 24th annual Rio Grande Valley Celtic Festival and Highland Games, which will be held on May 19th and 20th at the Balloon Fiesta Park in Albuquerque. Mona Malik is not only an actress who's been on this show many times, but an athlete in these games. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
And I'm happy to say that Charles came dressed in a kilt. This is a really amazing... I didn't know anything about this. I did not know that there were Celtic games, much less in New Mexico. But these are games that include a whole bunch of events, not a single one of which I'd ever heard of. The caber toss, the Scottish hammer throw, the stone put, the sheaf toss. What's it all about? Is it basically Scots getting together and throwing heavy things?
Well, it's a lot about that. I mean, testosterone obviously factored into it, you know, way back. But if you look back at the history of Scotland, Scotland was occupied for a large part of its history by England. And so as an occupied country, in essence, they weren't allowed to maintain a standing army. So with many societies that have had that kind of a situation, they developed means to train their men, their warriors, without having it look like actual military exercises. And so the games came about as a means for the King of Scotland at the time to begin to have some sort of training program for the warriors to keep them in shape, keep them motivated, in the event that they ever had an opportunity to go to battle.
Very interesting. So they learned to do all these, again, what it looks like throwing heavy things, and tell us about what some of the activities actually are.
All right. Well, most of the events, in fact, all of the events really came out of the society at the time. If you look back in the 1400s, you know, it was a much different society than we have today, and so much more physical labor elements. So the sheaf toss, for example, not sheep, which is one of the things that refers people to.
It is not a sheep toss.
It's not a sheep toss. It's a sheaf, like a sheaf of wheat.
As in the sheaves, right.
Yes. So when you would harvest the sheaves of wheat, as the wagon went around, you would throw them onto the wagon. Well, the more sheaves you could load onto the wagon, the less trips you had to make out into the field. And so the higher you could throw them, the higher you could stack them. And so it became its own competition and a skill set. And so they brought all of these events together from the agrarian society that they had at the time and kind of molded them in. You know, these were kind of tests of skill and of strength that the working class had kind of used in the fields and whatnot. Like the throws, the hammer throws. I mean, very simply, when they were putting posts in the field, you had a large sledgehammer to drive the posts, and if you wanted to get it to somebody in the next field over, you could walk the hammer over, or you could throw the hammer to them.
Right.
And so many of these all came from, a lot of day-to-day application that they had at the time.
Very interesting. So how did they get codified into actual games? Are these things that are done in Scotland and in festivals all over the world? Or?
Oh, yeah. They are actual official games. They all have essential rules that have been in place, I want to say, since about the late 1400s, when the first one, the King of Scotland, and his name escapes me, unfortunately, but when he kind of announced or decided to have the first games, they put these in as codified events and set them in. So there's nine total events. You are required to compete kilted, so everyone has to wear a kilt out on the field.
And what about the females? I mean, you, Mona, are going to be out there kilted doing this. Is it the same events?
It is exactly the same events. The only difference is the weights. And so men throw heavier weights, and there's actually classes for weight. So there's a men's class that's under 190, is that right?
That's correct.
And then there are master's classes, so that's athletes over the age of 40. And so they all have their own set of weights that they use. So I don't have to throw what Chuck has to throw.
And are there age differences also in the women's class?
Yes, there are. There is. And that depends on the games and how many women compete and probably how long the games have been going on and how big the classes are. So in Albuquerque, there's a master's class, and there was a master's class in Tucson as well, when I threw in Tucson. But the games I just threw at this weekend, there was just a women's class, and so there isn't that delineation for age in all the games.
How did you learn to do this, and how did you each get into it?
Well, actually, Chuck has been a friend of my husband for a really, really long time, and I had started working out about 2 years ago and thought, well, great, I can go to the gym. And so, and I'm not a runner. I couldn't figure out what else I wanted to do, and my husband reminded me, oh, I think Chuck throws that Scottish stuff. And so I sent him an email, and he sent me a whole bunch of information about it, and I looked at it and went, uh-huh, yeah, and put it away for a couple months, and then I showed up at a practice, about last March, probably. Mm-hmm. And so I've been throwing a little bit more than a year.
And what do you throw?
Well, same stuff. Hammers, weight for distance, weight over bar, cabers, so wood and metal is what we throw.
Pretty much.
The weight over bar, it's like a pole vault bar, and you have to throw the weight over the bar and also not knock the bar off.
Yeah, and that depends on the game. Some of the games have fixed bars, and some have bars that will actually fall away if you knock into it. And we used a fixed bar in Albuquerque.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we use a fixed bar. The traditional games use a knockoff bar. And it will lower the weight, the height, obviously, that you can get, because if you touch it, generally you're knocking it off or breaking it. But it also stretches out the length of the games, so a lot of the games, for convenience sake, will use a fixed bar.
Now, how did you get into this whole throwing business?
Well, I actually got started in Strongman back at about 2000.
And Strongman?
Strongman competitions, like you see, like World's Strongest Man with the Atlas Stones and all of that. So I had competed in that for several years, and at one competition, somebody had mentioned, hey, next week there's a Scottish festival in Rio Rancho. You should go check it out and compete. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I went out there, and, you know, you're walking on the field and kind of seeing all these guys in kilts throwing things, which was definitely something I hadn't seen before. But the thing that kind of struck me with from my first competition was seeing found out later it was Wayne Staggs from Colorado, who's an older gentleman. He's 63 now, so he was in his early 50s when I started. And he was throwing the caber and basically destroying anyone else in terms of his skill level. And so it struck me, as opposed to strongman, which has a very limited, you know, time frame that you can actually compete in it competitively, if you can be competing and improving and doing well into your 50s and 60s, that really attracted me to the sport.
And so you pretty much throw the sheaves and the stones and the hammers and the cabers and everything else.
Yes. Every games will usually have between 7 and 9 events. So there's a possibility of having 2 stones, 2 hammers, 2 weight for distance. These are all light and heavy variants of each other. The sheave toss, the caber toss, and the weight over bar.
How do you train for this in such a way that you don't get injured?
Well, I think, you know, serious injuries are not that common in the sport. I will say anytime you're lifting, you know, heavily implements and doing the kind of explosive training, there's always going to be tweaks and injuries you acquire. But you go out in your backyard and chop down your tree. No.
And then throw it.
No, you try to find somebody. Luckily, when I got started in the sport, there was somebody local, Grant Oliver, who had the equipment. And so we have a practice that we do every Sunday at Valley Pool Park down in Albuquerque, and we invite everybody to come out and to participate. And we rotate through all the events week by week so that everybody has a chance to kind of train on all the implements.
Now, in addition to all of this throwing and all of the different events and different sub-events, different ages and so on, there's also beer, whiskey, and haggis. Is that right?
That's correct. We've got a lot of that at the festival. In fact, this year we've got 2 new things that hadn't been at the festival. We have a whiskey tasting that's scheduled to go on, so Scotch whiskey.
Like a wine tasting, yeah, only whiskey.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. With various Scotch, and I'm trying to think, that's Two Fools that's sponsoring that. And then we talked to the Brewers Guild, and they're actually putting on a brewing competition at the games. So they'll be providing, you know, homebrew beer as a competition that the Brewers Guild is doing. So that's a new event this year as well.
There are also, I mean, there's this whole Scottish element to it in the sense that, well, let me ask you, how many people who compete are actually Scottish or of Scottish origin?
A large number are of Scottish origin. I mean, it depends on how far back you want to go and kind of the history of your family to find it. but a lot of folks can trace their ancestry back. But that's not a requirement to compete. We have a lot of local competitors who are not Scottish.
Like Mona.
Like Mona, mm-hmm. who will come out and compete. And that's great. We welcome everybody to come out and compete. I mean, a lot of it is the camaraderie. It's the whole nature of the sport that we want to encourage everybody to come out and try it out and throw and have a good time. So, I mean, the Scottish heritage part is really nice, but it's not like the clan tents, which are set up for a clan, by a clan, and they're promoting the actual clan history. We're looking at the sport, which is a Scottish-based sport, and we're trying to broaden it out and make sure that everybody's included and can compete if they'd like to.
But there are clan tents.
Yes. Yeah, there are. Will be a number of clan tents throughout the festival for all the various clans that have representation locally, and I believe some will be coming in from out of state.
And you only get to go in if you're in the clan?
No, anybody can go in. All the clans tend to promote their history and just kind of tell you a little bit about themselves. But anybody can kind of go in. They'll usually try to help you because they'll have succession of names and whatnot. So if you're curious if you belong to which clan, you can go research your name. They'll have some various tents set up that are just kind of, we'll do the clan research. They'll have all the tartans laid out so that you can kind of find out what your tartan is for your clan. It's pretty neat.
Now, let's say that you win one of the competitions. Do you then have the opportunity to go on to regionals or nationals or anything like that? Is it set up like that?
It's not quite set up like that. Most of the Scottish games are fairly independent. There are a number of, like the World's Masters Champions, which Mona is going to be competing at next week in South Carolina.
Next month.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
They require you to have a minimum of five recognized games in the previous year so that you've shown that you're an active competitor at sanctioned events. But as far as like an NCAA where you have a regional setup or anything like that, it's much more informal in terms of the games.
So it's really above all the love of the game.
Exactly.
Which really, I mean, you can see on the field. It is the only sport I think I've seen where, you know, someone who's chasing you or chasing your number or is better than you will come up and tell you, you know, if you just bend your knees a little bit more, this is going to give you that extra inch, you know, and people will coach each other and help each other, and it is the most encouraging thing I've seen ever.
Even the person who wants to beat you will be...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's all about just doing your best and beating your own numbers. And everyone, my experience has been that everyone is there to help you do that because that's what they want to do too. And they'll often turn and say, what'd you see? What'd you see? Did I straighten my arm that time or did I bend my elbow that time? And so it's a very supportive and very competitive environment. It's pretty unique.
And of course, no Celtic festival would be complete without bagpipes.
Oh yeah, you'll get to hear plenty of bagpipes. They have a piping competition usually at the games, so they'll be doing various numbers, none of which I could really name, but
or God forbid, sing.
Exactly, but that's going on all throughout the festival, so you get a real experience of Scotland when you're there. Just from hearing that, the bagpipes are mm-hmm. so unique and so original. That while you're competing or having lunch or just wandering around the festival, there's always bagpiping going on, and it's such a unique sound. I really like it. It's great to kind of get immersed in that and have that around you as you're competing. It just adds to it.
What strikes me about this whole thing is it's big. Big people, big weights, big food, big sounds. I mean, it's really a massive sport.
It can be. We do have a number of classes, though, that are for everyone. We have the under 190 class for men, so it's a lightweight men's class, so you can compete on a weight base as opposed to a skill base. And having said that, there are several, I mean, Johnny Stone, who currently holds the record, I believe, through the sheaf 29 feet as an under 190 athlete.
How much does the sheaf weigh?
For the lightweight men, it would be 16 pounds.
So throwing a 16-pound thing... 29 feet.
That's correct.
Yeah. That's a long way to throw a 16-pound
thing.
That's up in the air,
over your head. So.
And that has to go over the crossbar. So there's certainly an element of accuracy that works into mm-hmm. that event as well. So you can't just throw it high up in the air. You have to get it over the crossbar.
Right.
One of the most joyous things you'll learn as a kind of a statement when you'll hear that, oh, you had the height.
You had the height.
which is always kind of a
Those are the dreaded words, isn't just muscling something up. It isn't just about the power. It's about the accuracy. I mean, the event that a lot of people will know is the caber, the pole, the most dramatic event. That is all about accuracy, because it's not about how far you throw it, how high you throw it, but whether or not you throw it accurately at 12 o'clock, because it's graded. It's graded on a clock,
right?
And so it has to fall perfectly at noon. It looks like it's all just power and throwing your weight around, but it really is a skill. It really is a skill-based event. All of them are.
Mm-hmm.
All about form.
There's a great website, which is KeltFestABQ.com. And not only can you find out about the Rio Grande Valley Celtic Festival, but you can also see pictures of people involved in these events, and they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. They're pictures of super, super buff dudes in kilts holding rocks about to throw them and things like that. It's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for being here. Charles Thomas is the athletic director, and Mona Malik is an athlete at the 24th annual Rio Grande Valley Celtic Festival and Highland Games. Once again, it's May 19th and 20th at Balloon Fiesta Park in Albuquerque. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having
us. Thanks
so
much.
We appreciate it.